Welcome to The Local Take with Kiplin Primus on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. This weekly public affairs program features dialogue and community engagement with leaders and organizations making a difference in the areas we serve.
Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, I wanted to talk about the African-American community and our history in the healthcare system, especially because that is so important right now with the COVID-19 pandemic and vaccines and, everything else that health impacts. So I reached out to two doctors, Dr. Jane Morgan from the Association of Black Cardiologists and Dr. Bell, the founder of Closing the Gap in Healthcare. And I wanted to discuss those disparities, how they've impacted our community, and ask some hard questions, because it's not so much what doctors say when we're being treated, it's kind of what they do. So we're going to start with Dr. Morgan. And Dr. Morgan, welcome back to The Local Take.
Thank you. I appreciate being back. It's been a while.
It has been.
I've missed you guys.
Yep, it's been a while. So I wanted to have this conversation because in the mainstream media for the last few weeks, they've talked about the distrust between African Americans and the healthcare community, and they all referenced the Tuskegee experiment. But the Tuskegee experiment was just one part of the events that have led to this distrust. So can you talk a little bit about what it means for you to be a doctor and to understand this distrust that, you know, your community has of your profession?
No, sure, absolutely. And it's an excellent question. And, you know, it's one of the reasons that we see that our community, by and large, seeks out Black physicians as their doctors. So Black doctors have about 80% of the African-American population. And the reason for that is, just as you've already alluded, that patients really seek safety first. And we are really the only population that chooses their doctors in that way, where we first seek some place where we feel safe, where we feel that our lives are valued, where people hold our lives in equal value to that of other people as well. The second reason that we select Black doctors is because of dignity and respect. Who's going to treat us that way, such that we feel comfortable, such that we feel understood, and we feel respected? And so certainly all of those things, you know, come into play. Healthcare has not been an exception in the entire role of social injustice and social bias, certainly not at all. And we see that in the opiate epidemic. We saw that in a number of things, actually. But certainly the opiate epidemic is probably the one that's the most relevant with regard to how opiate prescriptions are given, and why the opiate epidemic is mostly widespread in the white community and not the Black community, because this is how prescriptions are given out, and Black patients are not generally seen or perceived as having pain or being deserving of having a relief of pain or being seen as drug seekers. And so by and large, our pain, which is real, is undertreated, which leads to not only physical pain, but mental and emotional pain as well, which decreases the rate of healing. And we see then that white patients are overprescribed. They're seen as needing more and deserving more. And so what has happened is, when we see this opiate epidemic, we see it by and large in the white community, because they're the ones who have been provided access to pain-relieving drugs.
And that idea about pain and African Americans, that the healthcare industry, for whatever reason, perpetuates the myth that we don't feel pain, that our skin is thicker. You know, how did these stereotypes or these untruths, you know, come to be embraced and still be embraced today?
You know, I think some things are overt bias and some are unconscious bias. And it's just like anything else, the People who come into the medical establishment as physicians and nurses and PAs and other types of medical support, they come with their biases. People aren't born doctors. You become a doctor later in life. So you already are the person that you are. And you bring those things with you into your practice, even sometimes as you try to be equitable and you try to be fair, you have some unconscious bias. And the opiate epidemic is a great example of sort of both intentional bias, I think, on the parts of some, and unconscious bias on the parts of others, their perceptions of Black people. And it's a great example of why we seek out Black physicians, such that we are not subject to stereotypes and negative perceptions that can impact our health.
And Jane, you're talking about the opioid epidemic, and I actually heard someone describe it as the downside of white privilege. But when you're talking about pain, it brings to mind the Dr. Sheila Moore, who died of COVID-19 in Indianapolis, and she filmed herself being mistreated in the hospital, being denied painkillers as she's dying of COVID-19, and the healthcare professionals said that they felt intimidated by her. And I don't understand how anyone can feel intimidated by someone in a hospital bed, but literally she died filming herself begging to be treated with due dignity. You know, the anecdote from Serena Williams, where she is begging the healthcare professionals, I have this problem. I know what's going on. Can you please treat me? And they said, you're exaggerating. You're groggy. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, do white people not know what they're talking about when they tell you what's going on in their bodies? Why is it thought that we don't know what we're talking about when we're telling you something's wrong?
Yeah, and Black women are a special category because we're seen not only in society but also in our professional roles as being angry, aggressive, and these are the types of adjectives that are ascribed to us often, regardless of the situation, regardless of what the reaction is, regardless of how the email was written. This is how we are described repeatedly, even in performance evaluations. And so even in professional development, we have to walk a very fine line. Other people are able to have other types of behaviors that we are really not allotted. And so I think we see that as well in patients. You see, here she was literally dying of COVID and still considered to be aggressive. Because that is the perception of what you think of a Black woman. And she died, unfortunately, in pain undertreated. She stated that she was being made to feel that she was a drug seeker. And so I think these are all things that, you know, we grapple with as well in our community as we try to understand what health equity is, how COVID has uncovered, really, the scab of the communities and how we're living and how it has negatively impacted us because of this gap in health equity and what that means with regard to multi-generational households, the types of jobs that we might have, the types of education that we may have had access to, food deserts that we live in, pharmacy deserts that we live in. When we think about this COVID vaccine rollout, going out to pharmacies and drugstores and supermarkets, you think about populations of people, Black and brown people, who live in areas without supermarkets, without fresh fruit, without pharmacies, so without access. So if this is where we're going to put the COVID vaccine and we are looking to impact the communities that are impacted the greatest and they don't have access to these pharmacies and these supermarkets because they are so far away from their homes, then you know, how is it that we are managing this? We're not looking at the entire picture. And I think COVID has certainly uncovered, quite a few layers of this.
And the challenge is, and this is from the National Academy of Medicine, that even when you control for characteristics like class, health behaviors, comorbidities, and access to health insurance and healthcare services, we still come out on, you know, the losing end. We were talking about the maternal mortality rate, but also the black breast cancer rate. And they've done studies. Black women are less likely than white women to receive, you know, radiation in conjunction with a mastectomy. So we die more from breast cancer than other women because we're not getting the optimum treatment.
So one of the things we have to start to think about within our community is the access to clinical trials. And that's been a taboo subject, and I'm just going to just talk about it directly here. I don't know if you have gasps amongst your audience. You know, certainly there is the Tuskegee experiment. There are many others. Henrietta Lacks, there's Dr. James Marion. I mean, we can just go on and on down the list. In the essence of time, I really won't talk about them. We certainly know what they are. But here's where we are in 2021. And clinical trial offer our best and brightest thinking. There have been no major inventions in the medical world that have not come through clinical trial. The people who are enrolled in those clinical trials are generally white males, including in our vaccine trial, including in our cancer trials like breast cancer, colon cancer, and prostate cancer that disproportionately impact our population. And yet we don't enroll in these trials. Cancer clinical trials, on average, decrease your rate of recurrence if you are enrolled in a trial and can, in some instances, expand your lifespan, even if it's only by 2 weeks or 4 weeks or 6 weeks. How valuable is that for you to be with a family member? And even for those cancers where we are disproportionately impacted, we don't enroll in those trials. The reason we don't enroll in those trials is because we don't trust the healthcare system. The other reason that we don't enroll in the trials is that our physicians are not principal investigators, meaning they are not the lead physicians on the trials that are connected with these drug companies, the vaccine companies, pharma, devices. So if our doctors are not connected to them, they can't recommend these trials to us. We have a reticence and a trepidation already for the trial. And so the best health care is going to people who can access trial. I would say that if you have a chronic medical condition that is being managed by you and your doctor and you are not being offered a clinical trial, you are being treated optimally, meaning to the best medical therapy that we have coming out of the FDA, but you are not being treated maximally. To be treated maximally means that you have access to tomorrow's therapy. You have access to something that is not available. The only way you can get that is via clinical trial. I'll give you a great example. Look at what happened when Donald Trump, president of the United States, became ill with COVID-19, was helicoptered over to Walter Reed. He immediately received, under emergency use authorization, Regeneron's monoclonal antibody therapy. The only way you receive that is within a clinical trial or emergency use authorization. The only other people who receive that are those who are in clinical trial. He survived that, a 74-year-old male, overweight, desaturating, meaning his oxygen levels were dropping. He received Regeneron therapy. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about platinum-level health care. That's the kind of health care that our community doesn't even access because we have this trepidation about experimentation. And we've got to begin to think about this in a different way. So this is where health equity is. Not only that, I will add that if you are uninsured or underinsured, the way to access health care is via clinical trial because your medical costs are covered. Your research visits are covered. You have direct phone numbers of nurses and research coordinators who are responsible for your care. Where else can you call someone immediately from your house or send someone an email and you get this response? That's platinum level health care. Those are clinical trials, and we don't access that. We white males access that. And so when drugs and devices and vaccines are developed, we then question, are they relevant to us? Because we weren't in the clinical trial. So is the data relevant?
We have a lot of work to do, Dr. Jane Morgan. I want to thank you so much for talking with us this morning. I want to ask you one last question. Have you gotten the vaccine yet?
I did. I received the vaccine. Today is Wednesday. I received it Saturday, so I'm on day four. Feel great. I had some injection site pain right where the needle went in, sort of like I would with the flu, have a little soreness, a little stiffness in my upper arm for about a day, 24 hours or so. It didn't really keep me from doing anything. I was still exercising, my whatever my normal daily activities were. I had no fever, nausea, vomiting, cough, headaches, myalgias, muscle pains. I've had nothing. I had injection site soreness and stiffness, very similar to when I have a flu shot and it resolved after 24 hours. So I am 4 days out. I'm grateful to have received it and am looking forward to my second shot. And I received the Moderna vaccine.
Well, Dr. Jane Morgan, I just want to thank you so much for what you shared with us today and what you're continuing to do to help increase health equity in our community.
Thank you so much, Kiplin. I appreciate being invited on. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take, and we are back talking about African Americans and our history in the healthcare system. And this time we're joined by Dr. Thaddeus Bell, the founder of Closing the Gap in Healthcare. Dr. Bell, welcome back to The Local Take.
Thank you very much. I appreciate having the opportunity to speak to you again.
Well, I want to tell you that the last time we talked about COVID-19, and you explained that if you were African-American and needed to be admitted to the hospital, you were supposed to let them know about your high blood pressure, obesity, and diabetes. And that was one of the problems with COVID. People were coming to the hospital, and we African-Americans couldn't seem to get admitted. So in talking about this tension relationship that our community has with the healthcare system, you know, a lot of people want to start at Tuskegee, but this is something that has been going on ever since we came to this country. So how can we as African Americans get health equity when we are working with a system that doesn't treat us with the same humanity as they treat others?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. However, I can tell you that because of our history with the healthcare community, and of course, COVID has exposed a lot of things that we have been aware of for a very, very long period of time. The answer to that question is a difficult one. Because it involves a response from the patient, it involves a response from the doctor, and it involves an adequate response from the system, I should say the institution of medicine. Let's take each one of them separately. The institution of medicine, as it has been related to African Americans, has been a racist one for the entire time that medicine has taken care of or had a relationship with African Americans. Historically, we have been taken advantage of, experimented on, and et cetera. That's why the mistrust that African Americans have with the healthcare system is so pervasive and is going to be difficult for the healthcare profession to overcome. So we are dealing with a 400 year history of being abused by the system. That's number one. So we can't change our history. Secondly, the doctors or the system that gives the care currently are only beginning to recognize and appreciate what that abuse of 400 years, how that abuse has affected us. And so the system is slowly recognizing and trying to change in order to do something about it. But those kinds of changes come very, very slowly. One of the things that I'm intrigued with is that the doctors are oftentimes not aware of the history of medicine and African Americans because they are not taught that in medical school, and they are not made aware of those kinds of things in medical school. And so the other thing that we have to remember is that doctors come from a society that has embraced racism and discrimination. So it would be difficult to expect their behavior as it relates to minorities and the underserved in many cases to be different. And then thirdly, the behavior of African Americans as it relates to the healthcare profession has not always been good. By that I mean our health literacy, and by that I mean what we know about taking care of our bodies has not been appropriately taught to us. And for those of us who it has been taught to, lots of times we go into denial about our medical issues. Lots of times myths and untruths that have been perpetuated down through the years continue to be a part of the mindset of many African-American people, and taking some responsibility for your own health care when it comes to, being able to do the right thing regarding your own health care has been an issue. So you can see that that question is a very, very complex one. It involves 400 years of racism. It involves the medical profession just recently acknowledging that, yes, we have done these things to people of color and the underserved, and it has had a tremendous effect and is causing a lot of distrust. But at the same time, people of color have to bear a small portion of the bad health outcome that they experience. So from my perspective, and I've been looking at this for about 45 years of my practice in medicine. In fact, one of the reasons that we started Closing the Gap in Healthcare was to see, could we impact the part that talks about health literacy, whether or not I could educate African Americans and the underserved about hypertension, educating our people that, look, you will develop high blood pressure if you eat a lot of salt. You will develop high blood pressure if you let your weight go out of control. You will develop high blood pressure if you smoke too much. You will develop high blood pressure if you drink too much. You will develop high blood pressure if you let yourself, gain a significant amount of weight. So what Closing the Gap has been trying to do, we've been trying to educate our people about those kinds of things. We've been trying to get rid of a lot of myths and untruths like, no, you can't drink vinegar and expect your blood pressure to go away. No, you can't put moss in your shoe and expect, your blood pressure to go away. No, you have to take your medicine every day if you're going to keep from having a heart attack or stroke or develop dementia or kidney failure, and the list just goes on and on and on.
So Dr. Bell,
I hope you can see where it's a combination of it's just a combination of things, and recognizing that poverty, socioeconomic status, where you live, all of those things, have played a major issue in our poor outcome.
Is the answer more Black doctors? Do we need to train more culturally sensitive doctors?
That is certainly the case. Having more Black doctors would certainly help the situation. That is a major problem. African Americans make up about 13% of the population of the United States, but we represent about 4 or 5% of the healthcare professionals that deliver the care. We do know that people of color, in lots of instances, prefer to have people that look like them or come from the same background as them. We certainly know that we are more likely to follow their directions and to do what they suggest because they come from the same culture that we come from, and they come from the same background, and they speak our language, and so they understand our behavior. So certainly that is having more Black doctors, not only doctors, but just people in the healthcare profession in general would certainly be helpful. But that's not the only thing.
Well, Dr. Bell, I know we could talk about this for an hour, and I wanted to talk about it because, again, there is this tension and distrust between our community and the healthcare community. And I think we're going to have to figure out how to address that if we will ever, get to equity. I want to thank you so much for what you're doing with Closing the Gap. And thank you, as always, for sharing with our listeners on The Local Take.
Well, thank you very much. The time went by amazingly fast. I look forward to talking to you again.
Happy New Year, Dr. Bell.
The Local Take with Kiplin Primus on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is produced by Kiplin Primus, Jami Wellman, and Rob Maynard for WCLK. If you have comments about today's program or suggestions for future programs, you can leave a voicemail at 404-880-6211 or email kiplinprimus@gmail.com. You can listen to these interviews on demand at wclk.com or via the WCLK app. Thanks for listening.